Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. I'm back.
You're back from holiday.
Back from holiday.
It seems like you've been gone forever.
Oh, that's nice of you.
Back on the salmon sofa.
Back on the salmon sofa in the studio talking about Land Rovers again. If only my Freelander 2 was as pleased to see me when I got back and went to go and drive it for the first time.
Was that the airport car?
No, we took my wife's car to the airport.
Okay.
So, on fuel. So, she went to take the Freelander to the gym and she came back in the house and said, oh, your key isn't working. And I thought, oh, that's slightly annoying. Try her key. That didn't work either. Oh. And the reason it didn't work was because the battery was completely flat on the Freelander, like, to the point where it wouldn't even try and unlock. I did have a slight inkling that the battery was on the way out because when I last went camping, obviously when you're getting in and out of the car and opening doors.
Drains things, yeah.
Yeah, so when I went to drive off in the morning after camping the night before, I could tell it was a little bit slower to turn over than normal. So I thought, the battery is about 5 years old, so it's not done too badly.
It's always when the weather gets a bit colder, the batteries just go, that's it, game over.
Yeah, I think if sitting for a week while we were away hadn't finished it off, I think the colder weather would have done. So new battery for the Freelander 2 went on the other day.
How much was the battery for that?
It was about £100.
That's not too bad.
For a Uasa one. So
yeah, I've had a Uasa battery. In fact, I think I've got one then.
Top tip, in fact, if you're going to replace your Land Rover's battery, and it's a model which later on in its life had stop-start, a lot of the time you can buy the higher capacity battery, which is designed for the stop-start vehicle, so like the later EU emissions-friendly ones and like the TD4E, but it will fit a non-stop-start car, so it gives you a little bit more cranking capacity. So that's what I did. So the last two, it's had a stop-start battery on it.
That's a good tip. You know, here's a tip. Here's a question, though. So I have like a battery charger, like a Ring Automotive battery charger.
Yeah.
And you have to opt on that, whether it's a stop-start battery or not, before you charge it.
Right.
Would you have to then still know that that was a stop-start battery?
Only if the battery construction is different, which it isn't on the Freelander 2. So on a lot of stop-start, they're AGM, which is absorbed glass mat batteries.
Yeah.
Which are a different construction to your like standard lead acid, traditional type.
Okay.
So it's normally to do with that.
Okay. So it doesn't really matter?
No, I mean, as long as it says on top of the battery what the construction of it is. The Freelander 2 didn't use AGM battery, so it's the same as a non-stop start.
I reckon there'll be quite a few more Land Rovers out there at the minute with batteries going flat.
Yeah, tis the season, as they say.
Tis the season. Yeah, if you're in the market for buying a battery, then, yeah.
Yeah, get the best, same with anything, really. Get the one with the best warranty generally, because if the warranty is longer, that means the manufacturer has more faith in it and they're less likely to get returns. So that's I like to use name brand batteries, but that's always just been a habit, really. But yeah, she's back up and running now. No complaints at all. Yeah, just doing Freelander things, really.
Yeah. And obviously we're fresh back from Newbury.
Indeed. Yes, Newbury.
Coming to the end of the year of the auto jumbles.
It is. Hashtag Auto Jumble October, as I've coined it on Instagram, because it's three auto jumbles.
3 days away from heading to Ripon. So, yeah, there's three.
Yes, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, this weekend.
Not too late to head to Ripon.
Ripon Auto Jumble. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. I like Ripon. It's cool.
I love it.
And then at the end of the month, Malvern.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. 3 in 1 month.
Yeah, don't I know it. We had a cracking week, because obviously they had a Storm Amy approach the UK, didn't it? So Thursday, Friday of last week.
Yes.
Thursday, Friday. It was really cold and blustery. Saturday setting up was like, ooh, this isn't good. Sunday was glorious.
Sunday, it was like someone flipped a switch, wasn't it?
Beautiful, yeah. Well, we booked the sun, didn't we?
We always do pre-book the weather. It was
pre-booked it.
Glorious blue sky, not a cloud in sight. The wind died right down. It was prime auto jumble weather, wasn't it?
It was. So much so, you know, I made another purchase, as you well know, because it's still in the back of your Freelander.
Yes.
Having driven around on the Saturday, you know, we were putting the bins out and collecting all this, you know, making sure it's all ready to go. And there's a trader that had set up, and on his table, the only thing that existed on the table was another lower dash.
Yes.
So now I own two lower dashes.
You are slowly building up the monopoly of lower defender dashboards.
But this one cost me 10 times more than the last one.
Yes.
But it's a 9.5 out of 10.
It is a nice dash.
It is. And the guy restored it, actually, in the back of where they rot out, had cut out some template steel, stainless steel.
Yeah.
So it's like fit and forget.
It is a proper nice dash.
So I'm really, really chuffed about that. So that was a good find.
Definitely.
I think he was chuffed to sell it. I was chuffed to buy it. So
I think it was well bought and well sold. I think you are both winners in that situation, to be fair, because you have got, it is a lovely dashboard and it's got the plastic rail on the top.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it's a fit and forget now, so I can move on.
Yeah, just need a wiper motor cover now, don't you?
Yeah. Have you seen how much they are?
Yeah, they're almost as much of as a dash.
Yeah, they are. But, you know,
you got 2 more auto jumbles this month.
Yeah, I can't wait. Work. I literally cannot wait. I love it. I actually love having a list of things to obtain.
Definitely.
And that is what the fun of our auto jumbles actually is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is good. And there was such a vast array of stuff and a lot of traders there on Sunday at Newbury. It was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. About 600 or so traders. Loads.
Yeah, really, really good. I went for a walk with our pal Ian looking for a wing for his Defender. He needed a new wing, so I went hunting.
Did he find one?
He did indeed, yeah. A very, very nice condition wing at an excellent price. So he was a happy bunny. And all in all,
I need
fantastic
to look for some wings.
Yeah, well, have you decided what you're doing about those yet?
No, not really.
Because the wings that came off it are corroded, aren't they?
One of them is where it joins the chassis at the front, so that definitely needs addressing. The other one's okay. But I need to find a matching, not a matching pair, but like, I don't know, question mark on that really.
Because they do, SP do steel wings now, don't they? So you could go for them, or you could try and find some really nice used.
I'm not.
Original.
No, I think I'd rather have aluminium ones.
Yeah, I don't know. It all depends, doesn't it? But you need something really nice and straight, because everything else on that is going to be like straight as a die, isn't it?
Hopefully.
Yeah, no, it'll be good.
And I'll have the doors back this week.
Yes. Exciting. Galvanised two-piece series doors. Will be painted. Mm.
So, and windscreen frame.
Because at the moment, obviously, the only thing you've got back at yours, which has been painted, is a bulkhead. And that's quite an awkward shaped thing, isn't it? So when a big panel, like a door, comes back, that's going to be quite exciting. And it'll be cool to see what that colour looks like over a bigger surface.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, I remember going through the turmoil of, do I like it, do I not like it? But it's grown on me now. I've spent quite a lot of time in the shed, haven't I, tinkering about and looking at the colour, and it's just become the colour.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll go wrong with the colour.
Definitely.
I really like it.
But, So since you've been away, what was the Land Rover spotting like in roads?
Do you know what? It was few and far between, but what I did find was quite cool in its own way. There's some quite rare stuff. The first thing I spotted was when we were in Rhodes Old Town. If you've never been to Rhodes, you'll know it's like very, very good.
I love that place.
Lots of history.
Yeah, I like it.
Lots of nice stuff to see. Among the nice stuff to see was a V6 petrol Discovery 3. Didn't get them in the UK.
I was going to say, hang on, V6 petrol?
V6 petrol.
Is that the same engine as the 302?
No. No, it's a Jaguar. I'm pretty sure it's a Jaguar V6. AJ, I think.
The 3 litre?
Yes, yeah, 3 litre.
That they put in the F-Type?
I don't know what they fitted it in, but I'm sure it's Jaguar because they obviously used the 4.4 AJ V8 in the Discovery.
Oh, they put it in the XJ.
That would be it, yeah. That would be it, because it would have been the same footprint as the 2.7 diesel that they put in the XJ and the S-Type and all that jazz.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone out there will know.
Anyway.
But it
looks a little bit dishevelled. It had been parked under a tree, and obviously the sun beats down on it, and you could tell it was a used hard and put away dirty type job. But yeah, I saw the badge on the back, and I thought, crikey, I think that's probably the first V6 Discovery 3 I've ever seen in person. So that was pretty cool. Also saw a very smart sort of modified Challenge 90, all roll caged up. In another one of the little villages along the coast, which I've seen before because I've been to Rhodes before. And Rhodes must have an off-road club, pardon the pun, because it had the sticker on the back and it was obviously had big, like 35-inch chunky mud terrains on it.
Oh, right, okay.
Proper sort of like early 2000s challenge truck spec. And I was like, yeah, that's nice. really cool.
The thing you'd build now.
Yeah, as a bit of a throwback, really. As a proper, like...
A bit like your attire today. Sorry, that's a good day.
You need some new material, mate. That's yeah.
I know.
It's getting boring. It's getting boring.
Not for me.
Anyway. Yes, that was good. What else did I see? There's a couple of like older Freelanders there, but other than that, I think they were the highlights, really. Funnily enough, talking of older school sort of challenge truck type stuff, have you seen on eBay, there is rare loot on eBay in the form of a 3-link front suspension kit for a Defender. When's the last time you saw one of them?
I don't know. Is it?
It's a Terra Firma. It's branded as Terra Firma, but it's QT because it's got the QT badges cut into it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But a 3-link suspension, basically, the idea of that is you get rid of your Panhard rod and your radius arms on the front, which are quite restrictive travel-wise, and a 3-link really frees up the front suspension so you get a lot more articulation. So it was really popular back in like the challenge days. Not quite so good for driving on the road, I would hasten to add. And they, for that reason...
A bit leany in the corners. You
a little bit wallowy. Yeah. I don't think you'd want to do an emergency stop with one of these kits on. And I dare say it was probably sold under off-road use only.
Yeah.
But really unusual to see one for sale. And yeah, it's currently on eBay. Terra Firma 3-link kit. Looks brand new, to be fair. Yeah, really, really cool. I that caught my eye earlier, and I thought I must bring that up because when's the last time you saw one?
It's not something I would have noticed. I wouldn't know that it was rare. Okay. Well, the fact it's got QT written on it makes it quite rare.
Yeah, I mean, you still see
at least 10 years now since QT have not been around, isn't it?
As an off-road parts developer, yeah,
yeah, of course.
Their radius correction, caster correction arms, and like trailing arms, heavy-duty trailing arms, I had a pair of them. They were like everywhere not that long ago.
They used to have a kit called a Weekender.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and it mounted the dampers in front of the spring mounts on the chassis on a Defender. It was all, yeah, really cool stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there was that. And then there was also, not that long ago, on Facebook Marketplace, an Ashcroft Underdrive. Do you remember them?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, the What's Underdrive. That? Well, you know what an overdrive is, don't you?
Oh, an underdrive?
Yeah. So this goes on.
So it makes it lower though again.
Yeah, for like rock crawling.
Do you know? I've never had anything to do with one.
Really cool bit of kit, and very hard to find now because obviously they were quite a. Even when off-roading, rock crawling challenge events were at their peak, it was still quite a sort of niche thing, and they were very expensive. So to see one come up used is like non-existent.
So how much lower would that make to like first low?
Yeah.
How much lower geared would it make?
Oh, I haven't got the figures to hand, but they were like, they're proper, like, engine at idle, crawling along, like, barely moving. So, for huge tyres, really low speed, precision driving. They sold quite well in the States, obviously, because they've got a lot more rocks than we have. But, yeah, really cool bit of kit. That was on Facebook. I think the first asking price was something like 5,000 quid.
What?
I know. They just don't come up for sale.
You're going to have to... Could you have an underdrive and an overdrive fitted on the same gearbox?
No.
That goes in the same place?
Yeah.
So you have to pick your...
You'd have one or the other.
Yeah.
But I just thought, yeah.
Levers coming up everywhere.
Yeah. I just thought, like, I remember reading about the underdrives when they were on sale the first time and seeing a couple fitted to, like, real extreme off-roaders. And I thought, seeing that and then that 3-link kit sort of took me back. I thought, it's really cool. Couple of sets of Simex for sale at Newbury as well. All these old bits that are like, I wonder if there'll ever be like a resurgence, like people do up old Japanese cars in like the certain styles throughout the decades. I wonder if that will happen with Land Rovers and people will do like retro builds. I hope so.
They all say with fashions it goes full circle, so one day it might.
Maybe.
It's what I like is the stuff's still there. It's still out there.
Yeah, oh, it definitely is. It's in circulation. I dare say there's people out there who've got like this stuff stashed away or forgotten about at the back of a shed or a barn and perhaps either don't know it's there or don't really realise what they've got and that, you know, it's still quite desirable.
And this is what I really, really love. I mean, all our auto jumbles have unique sellers and people, but the Ripon one tends to get, because it's a bit further north in the country.
Yes.
It tends to get different sellers. You'll see the odd one that comes to Newbury and Malvern, but it brings out stuff that you've never seen before.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love it.
Ripon's a lovely venue as well.
Yeah, really, and the nice weather coming up is blue sky.
There you go. Again, so pre-booked just in time. Still time to pre-book if you're listening on Wednesday. Why not come and join us at Ripon if you're buying or selling? There's still time to book a ticket. You save money and you get in quicker.
A lot quicker.
Yeah, as we found at Newbury, because we were really trying to drive the pre-book because it helps us out because it's quicker to get people in.
You just go bleep and they're in rather than have to
fuss about with change
cash
and stuff.
Cards and stuff like that. It just gets people through.
Yeah, the line went a lot quicker this the weekend just gone than it has done previously because more people pre-booked. And it helps them out because they get in faster. So,
oh, another thing, we know how many people to staff for the pre-books.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the line's moved
like,
a lot.
It's almost like a priority boarding, isn't it?
It is, which I still don't understand because when we flew back from Rhodes, all these people were getting all excited and standing.
Oh, priority boarding?
Priority boarding. Yeah. What is the point? You get to sit in a seat for longer that you're going to be sat in for 4 hours.
Yeah, I don't understand the priority boarding on a plane, but priority entrance to a show when there's bargains to be had.
Oh, I agree.
So important.
100%. And you need to get there, right? People say, oh, it should be until 4 o'clock, which I agree. It would be nice.
It is on until four.
Is it? It's on till two, officially.
Yeah, but that's the last
people are still trading
for,
later.
That's the last entrance for day visitors to come through.
Yeah, people are still trading after two. But
yeah, they are, but it's going to like, it just peters out naturally.
If you want to get there and get your pick of the bargains, you need to be there early in the morning, really. And people do turn up early.
They do.
And then as soon as that 9:30 comes, boom, people are through the gate shopping, which is what we like. Really good in the hall as well this year. There's a really nice selection of like tool traders. We had clothing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it was just a real good selection of stuff. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
No, I did.
Would you like to hear a listener's email?
You've had a few, haven't we?
We are behind on the listener's emails, so apologies. We're probably going to split them across a couple of podcasts because there's too many to fit into an hour. So we'll kick off, though, with Sam Jubilee. He says, hi, Martin and Steve. Loving the podcast. It's been keeping me going while I'm doing the 2,000-mile harvest in the USA.
Oh, I wish I'd have done that when I was young.
Yeah.
Gone to America harvesting.
Yeah.
My cousin did.
Really?
He did it, yeah.
That's
what farmers.
A lot of the contractors and that in the UK and Ireland, in fact, go over to like New Zealand when harvest's done over here. They go over and do it over there and rake the cash in.
2,000 mile. Yeah. 2,000 what? Miles.
2,000 mile harvest, yeah. Wow. Serious acreage there.
Yeah.
I own a 1989 110 and a 1993 3-door Discovery 1. He says, it's nice to hear some British voices and good old Land Rover talk. I'm surprised about seeing a few Discovery 3s and Range Rover Sports while being more out in the countryside. I'm still upset that I missed all the shows this year. Can't wait to get back and do it all again next year. And I especially love getting the magazine in person rather than a digital copy. I hope the podcast keeps going for a long time. Thank you, Sam.
Well, I hope we keep making them for a long time. I can't see why we are going to change it.
I was going to say, thanks for, we hope the same, Sam. We thoroughly enjoy doing them. It's good fun, and we love to get feedback just like that.
He can come back and do the Land Rover shows, and I'll go and do the 2,000-mile harvest.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see you next year if you do come to LRM Live and other exciting developments. Another more technical question this time, Steve. Should we get straight into another one?
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So this next question is from John Mack. He says, hi, Steve and Martin. When you're next on the salmon sofa, I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you should fit the wading plugs to a 200 or 300 TDI Discovery or Defender engine ahead of winter. So for those of you who don't know, a wading plug is a little bung that screws in the bottom of the engine timing cover and bell housing. And they're designed to keep water out, essentially.
Now, I have those.
Yeah. Do you have them fitted?
I did have them fitted at one point, but then I don't really know why.
So in theory, you're supposed to only have them fitted when you go wading.
Because they are essentially breathers without, aren't they?
Yes. Exactly. He says, so the advice that John has heard is to fit them when you're planning on going off-roading. But as winter approaches, some people say you might as well fit them and leave them in for the winter months because no one wants to be under the Land Rover in the pouring rain when they next want to go wading. Is it better to fit the wading plugs and leave them in for 6 months ready for the next unexpected flooded road? Or does this risk greater damage than it seeks to prevent unless you know you're going off-roading? Many thanks and keep up the great work. John from Ipswich in Suffolk.
That is a really good question, actually, because I don't know.
Well,
you'll know the answer.
Thankfully, yeah, I have the answer for you, John. You are 100% correct in that your breather, your wading plugs should only be fitted when you're going wading to obviously stop water getting into your timing cover and your bell housing. However, what you can do on your timing cover especially is fit the bung, leave it in, but you need to make sure that timing chest can breathe. And what you can do is buy a plate from 4B, sell them, and a couple of others, that goes on the front of the timing cover where you normally access the fuel pump. And that has like a plastic pipe in it, like your axles and your transfer box. And you basically route that up top of the engine bay or the top of your raised air intake. So the timing chest can still breathe. You don't have to go underneath and screw the bung in all the time. You've got the best of both worlds, essentially. So for your timing cover, that's what I would do. I would get one of those breather kits from 4B. For your bell housing, arguably, it's not as well sealed as the timing cover anyway because it doesn't have like a gasket between the gearbox and the engine. So it's probably not quite as critical. I would be tempted to say you'd be fine to leave your drain bung in there if you wanted to. And in fact, when I worked on Land Rovers all the time, quite a few of them that came in, you'd put on the ramp and they'd have the drain bung in and there was never any problem. So yeah, but certainly for the timing cover, make sure it's got a breather on it if you are going to fit the timing, the drain bung and leave it in. That's my advice anyway.
Well, there you go. I've learned something.
Yeah, I mean, again, it all depends where you live and how flooded things tend to get because we do have floods, but not like wading depth floods, really, do we? You have them like...
Well, I've got a bit more of a question then. How deep does the water need to be to make it a problem if you didn't have them fitted?
If you think where your timing cover comes up to sort of your sump, the top of your sump,
yeah, essentially. Yeah, top of the sump. Which is quite a lot of water, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. And if you're driving with a bow wave like you should through floods, that again will clear some of the water out of the way. But you can't be too careful and you don't want water and muck and grit splashing around in your timing case. So, yeah, it's a bit to think about. But whichever you decide to do, definitely make sure that it can breathe. Otherwise, you'll have leaks and it'll, yeah, not good. So, another one. We'll let this make this the last one, shall we?
Yeah, cool.
And then we'll move on.
Hmm.
This is from Darren Bemrose, and he says, "Hi, I'm catching up on the podcast Back Issues. Really enjoy your content and delivery." Thank you very much, Darren. He says, "Would you discuss Lara Croft-style cages and roof options, please? I know my 90 TD5 isn't a 110 high cap, like the proper one,
yeah.
Film car, if you like." He says, "I'm a new granddad to a little girl and have given myself a 4-year project to turn my 90 into a Land Rover she will want to be seen in. I've returned to Land Rover ownership and green laning as I do not feel confident on today's roads on my motorcycles. The volume of vehicles and quality of driving leaves much to be worried about." I don't disagree with you there, Darren. Hence the want to, at times, get the wind in my bald head of hair in a Land Rover rather than a motorbike. Hope the subject warrants discussion on the podcast. And he says, "P.S. My 90 is currently a 3-seater van. Can I fit seats in the back?" We've discussed that on a recent podcast, Darren, so probably best go back. And we spoke to Expert Trim.
Very recently, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
I forget what episode. But
the legalities of it and things like that, forward-facing versus side-facing seats.
If you scroll back through the episodes on whatever streaming platform you listen to them on, and look at the descriptions. You'll find it in there. So as far as the seat things go, we won't go into that. But if he wants to do a sort of loose Lara Croft Tomb Raider style replica out of a 90 hardtop, what would you recommend?
So he definitely wants to be like a soft top. Is that what you're saying?
It's a 90 hardtop at the moment with seats in the front. He just wants to make it look a little bit more. It wants to accessorize it a bit, make it look more like the Lara Croft Tomb Raider style 110 that was so prolific and so like unique when it came out in the film in 1999.
Immediately, series doors.
Okay, yeah.
Because you can take door tops off.
You can, indeed.
Which isn't a bolt, it isn't a simple job, is it? There's a few modifications you need to make.
Yes, there are. You've also got a... consider that series doors aren't quite as well insulated and rattle-free as a Defender door. The Defender doors are a lot more like modern.
Yeah, but if money was no object, what I would do is put series doors on it.
Okay.
Military door tops.
Yes, with the diagonal
sliding windows. The diagonal sliding windows, they're a lot nicer.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. There's a few sets of them for sale at Newbury, actually.
How much were they?
They varied, I think, from sort of 200 to 400 quid.
Wow.
Yeah, but
yeah, they're great.
I would say, Darren, I would go for series doors because that does look cool. I'd go for a expedition style roof rack, like the OEM tubular roof rack, which Safety Device is made, I believe.
Yes, I'd say it is Safety Devices.
Because actually, tell you what, Land Rover did actually do a Defender 90 Tomb Raider edition. So if you Google that, you'll get an idea of what it looks like. Or go back to our Defender Ultimate Defender Buying Guide, which was March issue last year. There's a little bit in there about special editions, and that will have a bit about the Tomb Raider in it, because that will show you the accessories that came with from the factory. So you could pretty much do a replica if you can find the bits.
Black 8 spokes?
Black 8? No, that had boost alloys, anthracite boost alloys with a silver lip.
The Land Rover one did.
Oh, yeah, you're on about the tomb. The actual, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
The actual Tomb Raider one was black 8 spokes.
It did. Out of V8 as well.
Yeah, I loved that when that came out. That
it was proper. I remember going to see the film when I was like, well, 9. And it was like, yeah, it was so cool. Seeing that thing crashing through the jungle. Yeah, like the flat bull bar and all the accessories on
it. What year was that when that came out?
99. Yeah, it was a proper cool thing to see. It was like, yeah, as if you didn't like...
Yeah, well, that's like I had my X-Military 90.
Oh, right.
That's why I went Checker Plate Mad.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about seats. So, bucket seats.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it depends how far you want to go, because the more you do to it, arguably, the less usable it's going to be. I had bucket seats in my first ever 90 in it. Made things challenging.
How old? Sorry, the granddaughter, did you say?
Yeah.
How old is the granddaughter again?
It doesn't say, but he's given himself 4 years to do it. So.
So to be cool, you need some tunes.
Okay.
Don't you?
I think so. So you want a reasonable sound system?
A decent sound system. So
yeah.
Sound insulation, but decent. Sound system.
Yeah, yeah. She'll want to listen to her. It's her music, no doubt, in the Land Rover. Do you know what I'm looking at, actually, or I've thought about buying, is a Bluetooth speaker. Because my Series 3 and my 110 don't have a radio.
Well, like one of those cool ones? Like is it Marshall?
Jack Dobson will be spitting feathers because he hates them. I don't know.
Why?
They just look a bit pretentious.
That
sort of thing. But one that I can move from the Series 3 to the 110 and vice versa, and just because I only listen to music on my phone or podcasts anyway, so I don't really need a radio. So I'm thinking about getting a decent Bluetooth speaker that I can swap from one to the other. So if anyone's got any recommendations, editorial@lrm.co.uk, I would love to hear them, because I'm seriously considering it. Any kind of music or a good podcast does make journeys go a lot quicker, doesn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, I know what you mean about the Marshall thing. It's done for like, it's like that cool and vintage thing, isn't it? It's just kind of looks like
yeah
form over thing. I don't
know. You know, they're it is what it is. People like what they like. It fits in with the look of a lot of resto mod sort of beach cruiser type Land Rovers, doesn't it? It's that sort of, that sort of look, which is fine. But I'm not so fussed about what it looks like, and I want to be able to move it from, just put it in the dashboard and listen to it and then switch it over. But I want decent sound quality, and I don't want it to cost £8,000. So if anyone's got any recommendations, because there must be other people that have done this, drop me an email. Let me know. editorial@lrm.co.uk.
Nice.
You need to sort radio out in your 90, don't you? Still.
Yeah.
Are you going to put radio in the soft top?
Don't know. I don't think my new lower dash has a speaker hole in it.
Okay.
So then I'm going to be loath to cut holes in it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I am. So the one that I got is out of a military.
You know what, you get a Marshall speaker in there.
Yeah.
Bluetooth speaker. That would actually work in that.
It would look okay.
But yeah, I mean, years and years ago when I was 17, 18, it was head unit. I had speakers in the headlining, speakers under the dash, and a sub in the back, because that's what you do when you're that age, isn't it?
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was good.
You're not today, is it?
What's that?
New Issue Day.
I should know that, really, shouldn't I?
Yeah, today is the day the new issue of Land Rover Monthly goes on sale.
The December issue, no less, of Land Rover Monthly is in shops now, and you should go and buy it. And the reason you should go and buy it is because it's full of fantastic Land Rover content that you will not see anywhere else. Would you like, Steve, feature of the week, I almost called it feature of the month then, does seem like sometimes it is feature of the month because we do inevitably forget to do them.
You do.
But yeah. Ready?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Right, so
I've got no idea what's in it.
The cover feature, of course you have. The cover feature on Defender, on the Land Rover Monthly December issue, is all about rallying with Land Rovers. New shape Defender, no less. Roy Duffy has been to Wales to check these guys out with the test day. There's a selection of teams that enter the Defender Rally Series, and that's, you know, fantastic start into motorsport, full backup, spares package, you know, mechanic on site and all that. It's like a really fun, not easy, nothing in motorsport is easy, but it's sort of a great introduction to it, and it'll put you onto bigger and better things like Dakar, more international rallies in these vehicles, and the fact that they are as close to standard as they are, as you'll see in the feature, yet they put up with the punishment they do, is absolutely unreal. Really, really cool feature and a great insight into just how hard they're driven, the modifications that go into them, and the kind of backup and support you can get if you decide to go down the route and dip your toe into competitive motorsport. Really, really cool. And some excellent images from Roy as well. So be sure to check that out in the December issue, which is, as Steve rightly says, on sale now. So, you can go to the shop and buy LRM, or if you prefer, you can sign up and subscribe, which gets you it not only cheaper, but delivered to your door. Isn't that right, Steve?
It is. What a superb deal.
Yeah, exactly. What's not to like? Would you like product of the week off the back of that?
Oh, but actually, I've got a point. So last time's product of the week was the Machine Marked impact gun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I said I was going to go and get one.
Did you?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
How is it?
Yeah. I charge it up because you have to charge them from new. Haven't used it yet.
Oh.
But I have one.
There you go. Yeah. They're excellent value now.
Yeah.
Impact guns like that. Brilliant.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can't wait to use it, really, because I know when I need to use it, it'll be a lot better.
Mm.
So I went and got one.
You won't be disappointed. The price of other... Well, any product really, like these days, like impact guns are great value.
In my mind, they were like going to be £400.
They used to be. I remember when I bought my...
I remember it being in my mind.
Yeah. I bought my first electric impact gun when I was working in the dealer, and it was like quite a big thing. A lot of the other techs had already got them, and I was a bit of a late adopter of the electric impact gun. And the reason for that was there was so much money. Air-powered tools, you obviously got like handed down a lot of the time, and they changed hands, you know, for not much money at all, and you add air in the workshop. But an electric impact gun just makes things so much easier. So yeah, Machine Mark, top quality stuff at reasonable prices.
Yeah, no, no. Sorry, anyway, cut you off there.
That's right. So
what is this week's opportunity to spend money?
This week's opportunity to spend money is Series front disc brake conversion.
Oh, right.
Have you seen this?
Is something on yours?
No, this is from a different company.
Okay.
Mine is disc converted on the front, but this is from LOF. LOF brakes, LOF clutches. And the bonus to this setup is it uses a vented disc, which mine uses solid discs. And also, all the parts for this, the disc, the caliper, the brake pads, are all standard Land Rover items that you can buy off the shelf anywhere. Whereas the kit that I've got uses special brake pads that you can only buy from the manufacturer.
Right,
kind of... It's not a huge problem, but... You know, if that...
So it's a problem you think about if you were getting low on pads.
Exactly, yeah. They're a little bit... Yeah, I really like the kit that I've got, but that's pretty much... You know, that is a bit of a drawback. But this kit is... It's from 954 quid, which is a lot of money, but compared to disc conversions historically, actually pretty reasonable. And the it says basically keeping the number of non-standard components to a minimum, which is key. This front disc brake conversion uses Defender calipers, hubs, discs, and drive members with new aluminium swivels. So you get the complete swivel that bolts onto the axle.
Yeah, it's not bad, that.
No modifications or machining are needed. Replace everything outboard of the swivel ball, bleed the brakes, and you're good to go. It keeps the original track width, so you can use standard wheels. And the only change visually is you go from a 6-bolt to a 5-bolt drive member. So you use a Defender drive member on the end of the axle. Looks a really cool kit. Yeah, excited to see one in action, because I have to say, people defend drum brakes, and rightly so, because when they're working properly, they are great, but they do take a lot more maintenance than discs. That's their main downside, really.
Yeah.
I don't regret disc converting my series at all. It's brilliant. Consistent brake pedal all the time. And yeah, you don't get that horrible like lurching where one's slightly out of adjustment, or the, you know, you've picked up some water in one of the drums and you break and it slews up.
Oh, horrendous.
Yeah,
absolutely horrendous. Well, you get a load of clay in there or stuff like that and you have to clean them out.
Exactly. Yeah, they do make life a lot easier, whichever kit you use. But no, that looks really cool. LOF. Sorry, let me just remind myself of the email address quickly. I believe it's lofclutches.com. Yes, lofclutches.com. So go on there, have a little look, maybe do a buy, and we'll be back next week with another product of the week from this month's December issue of the magazine.
Well, at least I don't have a series and I don't have to go and spend £900 this week.
Well, quite. Your 90 would have had drums on the back from standard, wouldn't it?
It would have done, and it did do. So... converted it to a
Discovery axle.
Discovery back axle.
That was very, very common.
Yeah, and it was great because I had the entire Discovery, didn't I, at my disposal. So,
oh, of course,
the
yeah.
Grand Rover Discovery. So I had the back axle and I used the sold the front axle, kept the transfer box. That's in mine now. Yeah, power steering, engine, gearbox.
Yeah, they were.
Sold the gearbox, sorry. Because I've kept my LT77. But yeah, it was well worth having an old Discovery.
Definitely. Yeah. There's I was talking to one of the chaps who helps with our marshalling at the Auto Jumbles, and he was after an early Discovery front axle for his trialer.
Oh, you got one?
No. Did he get one?
You're talking about Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he find one?
He found one.
Oh, because last...
He found an axle case.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because last I heard, he was looking and he hadn't seen any that... That would do the job, because the radius arm brackets were narrower on the earlier ones, and then I think 1993 they went to a wider one.
Yeah, he's been building an 80-inch trialer, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's very cool.
3.9.
Really cool.
Really smart looking thing.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff as well.
How much do you think an axle case was for that?
100 quid.
I said 50, and he said no, half that.
Really?
25 quid.
What a bargain.
Yeah, just the axle case.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough. Maybe I was thinking of an entire...
25 quid.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, that's what he needed.
Do you know what though? They're getting harder to find bits like that, like series non-Salisbury rear axles and things like that. They're getting thinner on the ground. So if you've got stuff like that kicking about,
but they're still there.
They are.
They're still out there.
Yeah, you just have to look.
I like the hunt. The hunt of things.
Thrill of the chase.
Yes.
But I had a good good couple of hours in the garage last night, tidying up my 200 TDI, ready to go into the 110. I clocked the turbo round to make the boost pipe point in a more sensible direction, because whoever'd fitted that, just a Discovery 200 TDI engine, yes, yep. Whoever had fitted that in the 90 that it was in previously hadn't clocked the turbo, so it was rubbing on the chassis rail or some nearby part, and it had broken the turbo actuator and rubbed a hole in the manifold. So I wasn't very happy about that. Stripped the turbo down, drilled the back of the compressor housing for the turbo actuator bracket, put a new turbo actuator on it, put it all back together, and now it's a much more compact sort of arrangement, so all the pipe work will be a lot neater when I finally put it in.
Nice. Did you is the engine degreased?
No, not yet.
Right, it's a question then.
Go on.
So I pulled my mine out of the garage the other day, took the bulkhead off temporarily.
Yeah.
Because I realised the engine wasn't as clean as it should be.
Yeah.
So I bought some degreaser.
Okay.
And sprayed all that on, let it soak in. And it's made by Gunk.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But it's quite a soapy, watery fluid. So my dad used to have Gunk on the shelf in his garage. I'm talking like 30 years ago. That stuff was like magic. And I just don't think they're allowed to make the chemicals like they used to be.
No, I agree.
It was like soapy water. It was like almost like using washing up liquid in water.
I believe that that is true. And I also believe that it pretty much applies to every product that you can buy on the shelf in any shop. Nothing does the job as well as it used to when companies weren't worried about being sued.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Gunk don't make a good product, but it might just be the best of a bad offering. You know what I mean? Like the best products in its class. But I used it and it didn't take away the pain of it. And I was laying there underneath it scraping and because very, very greasy.
Yeah.
It looks okay now, but still not where I expected it to be.
I've found degreaser, weed killer, paint stripper, anything like that, which it needs to be corrosive and harmful to stuff. Nothing you can buy on the off the shelf in a shop is really as good as it used to be now.
No.
You used to be able to get really good degreaser from Screwfix. It's like dirt cheap degreaser.
So I've got some Screwfix. I think they call it No Nonsense.
Yes.
And that, I have to say, hasn't... Because I thought I'll get some Gunk, it'll do a better job. It doesn't. It's the same. I think it's the same stuff, but different colour.
The old stuff. The old
nonsense. No, I haven't got the old stuff. I've got probably a year old stuff.
I can't remember if it was clear and then now it's yellow, or it was yellow and now it's clear. But the old style No Nonsense degreaser from Screwfix was flipping brilliant. Yeah. And then they changed it and it's now not as good.
It'd be to do with the environmental.
It is. Same with Weed Killer. Any off-the-shelf Weed Killer is pretty rubbish. So get Weed Killer from someone you know who does farming or landscaping and it will do a far better job.
Mm.
It's a shame. It's weird. That said, I don't use generally any type of squirt on or like gel degreaser now. I just use brake cleaner for absolutely everything. It should be called everything cleaner. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It just melts grease away. You just spray it on and it just drips.
It didn't do too bad a job. I've got loads of brake cleaner.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I thought the degreaser would be like magic. I was a little bit disappointed.
Did you put a load of degreaser on and then pressure wash it off? Or did you scrub it and then wash
it? Well, some of it was so thick, you got a big screwdriver and was scraping it. Then I pressure washed it off. But kind of on a low pressure.
Right, okay. Yeah.
It's got more rinse rather than a pressure.
Diesel engines are one of those things where I'm finding as well with the 200, I really want to make it as nice as I can before I fit it. But realistically, within 6 months, it's going to be caked in gunk and schmoo. I do want to try and...
But whilst in the build stage, it's just nice to be working with clean stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, I agree.
Love Land Rovers? Then you'll love Land Rover Monthly, the world's best-selling Land Rover magazine. Packed with adventures, expert tips, restorations, buying guides, and loads more. For the best deals, subscribe today at landrovermonthly.co.uk and never miss an issue.
Are you going to chuck any new gaskets at it? Can you see where the oil's coming from, or is it just an accumulation of...
Some of it was leaking from the leak-off pipes.
Oh, yeah.
But I've replaced that.
Okay.
It has had gaskets, but this, obviously, it was never cleaned before. So it's just like over the years, it's had its B gaskets, it's had head gaskets, timing chain, all that stuff. Timing cover, gasket and stuff like that.
Like you say, it's the years of accumulation that makes them look as bad as they do.
Yeah, it is. You can say it's well and truly like built up.
It leaks a bit dirt sticks. It leaks a bit more dirt sticks.
Yeah.
And it gets cakey, doesn't it?
It's horrible stuff.
There's nothing worse than trying to fix something quick at the side of the road or whatever on an old diesel, and you just come out and you're like up to your shoulders in thick black muck. Ugh.
But what I did do is didn't allow that to go on the ground, so I used a piece of massive sheet of cardboard box.
Right.
Flattened out. All the grease fell. The water soaked through the cardboard and leaving behind the residue, and I could just put it away in the bin.
Good idea.
So,
because of the
dog walking in it and stuff like that.
If you're going to find a big chunk of dirt and grease on the ground when you're doing something completely unrated, you're definitely going to find it.
Someone walks into the house.
Yeah.
The dog. Like, can you imagine a mess?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you wouldn't be favourite after that, I don't think. But it sounds like things are coming along quite well. Have you managed to degrease it to a reasonable...
It is. Basically, I just expected this degreaser to take away all the labour, spray it on, rinse it off, ta-da. But it was not.
Yeah.
I spent a few hours...
I
say a few hours, 3 hours probably.
It'll be worth it though. You need to paint your sump, don't you? Give the sump.
Yeah, I do, because that's kind of like clean now.
The one
that looks rusty.
Yeah, they always do, don't they? Yeah. Do you know what? Years ago, I don't think it was the last Discovery I had. I think it was one before. I'd never seen it on a TDI before or since. The sump rusted through at the front. To the point it was properly leaking. I don't know why it did it. It must have had like a chip or something really early on in its life and it just corroded away. But
yeah,
keep on top of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I just want to get it done.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yes, exciting stuff. So more panels to come back from the paint soon and then start assembling, I suppose. We've got wiring limb to fit, haven't we? Brake pipes to go on.
There's
a bit to do.
What I've realised is... So with this month being a lot of shows,
yeah.
So there are no weekends.
No.
Well, there is one weekend, but
you'll spend that sleeping.
Yeah.
To get over the three auto jumps.
And then you're into November. Then it's Christmas. Really, December's like a write-off month, isn't it, for some people?
Depends what you're doing. If you've got time at home, you can smash loads of stuff.
Yeah, and then January, February, March, April. LRM Live.
Hey. Oh, you got loads.
Don't forget, you got a show in February. Two in March next year.
Sounds like you better pull your finger out, Steve.
And then May's the show. So, yeah, we've got very little time.
The year soon goes.
Glad you're back from holiday. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But, we'll get it done. We'll be all right. Mm. We'll be fine. I'm itching to go out and drive the 110 again. I really like that car. I really, really like it. It's really got under my skin.
Well, I jumped in my TD590 today after having a hire van for 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a hire van from Enterprise, Citroen Dispatch.
Right.
Which is kind of like, I don't realise how underpowered that is. I went up the road this morning in my TD590 for the first time in, over a week. It felt like a sports car.
Really?
That's how quick that TD5 is in comparison.
Okay. Yeah,
mad, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
really, really sluggish. What I did realise is how heavy a clutch is in the TD590 in comparison to what is essentially a car to drive.
Yeah. I think that comes from a lot of manufacturers because emissions and things like that, they fit engines that are too small into vehicles that are too heavy.
I'm sure, I don't know what size engine it'll be, but it's small.
Yeah.
You can barely hear it.
Isn't it the Isuzu D-Max you can get with the 1.9 twin turbo now?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
1.9 and a pickup. What are you thinking, Isuzu?
Well, yeah, but the Ford Ranger's only 2 litre.
2.2, aren't they? Are they 2 litre now?
They're the 2.2 and the 3.2. That's 2 litre, 10-speed auto.
I had a go in a Ranger Raptor at my old place, and they chucked me the keys and said, oh, you drive 4x4s, don't you? Have a go in that. and I loved it. I thought it was great in every way, but the engine absolutely ruined it. And that was one of the first 2 litre turbo diesel.
Right.
It's such a cool thing, and it handles really nicely, and the suspension's like fantastic, and it looks great. And it's got some wheezy little 2 litre diesel.
It's just really highly stressed. This van has got like a little, like the power band.
Yeah.
It hasn't got any power, but it needs all of the revs.
Did it feel like a lot of them have real, like they call it, I suppose it's a more sophisticated version of boost by gear. So in like first and second, they're absolutely flat, and then you get it in third and it's sort of...
Almost. It's designed that you have to drive it in a certain way.
Mm.
So almost like it's too governed.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
The pedal's real dead in low gears.
Nothing there.
Yeah.
Do you know that... I was thinking about this, right? I'm going to get on the high horse about things now. Right?
Okay, go on.
New cars are not designed by advanced motorists, advanced drivers.
Yeah, but have you seen the standard of driving in this day and age?
Yeah.
It's hardly surprising, is it?
And I think the cars are a lot to blame.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
Like this van. So I'll give you an example. So I had to drive up to the Lake District and back in a day, the other day. It was 9.5 hours. And on some of those roads up there are superb.
Mm.
And if you know how to drive, I'm not saying I'm the best driver in the world. Well, I am. I'm the best driver in the world. No, I'm not saying that.
It's all that time behind the wheel of the Jag.
Yeah, but there's, you know, like a series of bends, and you go around like a right-hand bend, but then there'll be a left-hand bend. If you hold out onto the right-hand side a little bit, you're getting an early view around the left-hand bend before the next bend. So it's like a series of bends. Oh, no, not in this van. It's fighting me every step of the way. So then I'm losing sight of the next series of bends, and the road is clear ahead. So as an advanced motorist, then, or advanced driver, you would get the early view, yeah?
Uh-huh.
This van is fighting.
Did you not switch all that lane departure rubbish
you
off?
You try and find the button in that van.
See, this was, every vehicle's got a different method of doing it.
Yeah, so more modern cars now, you can't disable that.
What?
There's apparently surely. Someone told me they'd bought something recently, a new car, and they stopped me from doing it. The thing is fighting me on the steering wheel. And the other thing it does... When the speed...
You're listening to the LRM podcast, the UK's number one commercial vehicle slating service.
And ranting about this modern stuff.
Yeah.
So when you set the cruise control at 70, so the number is then on at 70, but the speedo says 69. So it's always 1 mile behind. And I don't think I had OCD until I drove this van, right? Because I want those numbers to match. If I set something at 70, I want it to say 70.
Yeah.
Now, some people say, oh, you can't do 70 in the van but the van is a smaller van, so I'm under the weight limit.
Oh, right.
Because you're only supposed to do 60. Anyway, those numbers don't match, which really annoyed me. If you did 71 in a 70, it's beeping at you. If you do 31 in a 30, it's beeping at you. But when you go past those things that tell you what speed you're doing in the village, it's actually 28.
That's because speedos are always set high in cars.
So technically, I'm only able to do... Because the sat-nav thing that I don't have on, but it knows where the van is, knows which road you're on.
Yeah.
And it's beeping at you.
Yeah. See,
so
this...
It's beeping at you. Beep, beep, beep.
Even though you're not actually breaking the speed limit.
And I'm not breaking the speed limit.
And the numbers don't
match. But the computer
says
I am.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
Just
man alive.
I bet you were chuffed as nuts to get back in your 90s, weren't you?
I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed my 2.5 mile journey to work this morning in a TD5.
Yeah, cars that don't tell you what to
do. I may have left my headlights on. I didn't have any bings and bongs to tell me, say?
No.
My own stupid fault if I did.
Exactly. Have some accountability. It's 2025.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bring back old cars.
Yeah, 100%. The future's in the past. Don't go buying modern you can buy modern nonsense.
You can, but...
But it's just... I remember the first time I drove a vehicle with lane departure. It was a Discovery 5. And it does. It, like, yanks a steering wheel out of your hands. You're trying to traverse
even
a corner.
Even on the near side. So say there's someone coming over. Say someone's coming towards you and they're not paying attention and their car's drifted over the white line.
Yeah.
You take evasive action by steering to the left a bit. And the thing is fighting you because it thinks you're too near the near side.
I don't understand how anyone put that through and thought, oh, this is safe. The car will steer a bit for you. That's safe. On what basis does that even need to exist? I hate lane departure. I got picked up once.
To follow the roads exactly.
Oh, it's so...
In the middle. I'm really going to rant now. So on the road, there was like a semi-rural road, which wasn't a two-way road, but didn't have a white line up the middle. But I would say it was three-quarter size road.
Okay.
So anything coming the other way, you'd have to sort of like slow down. It's
a passing place, jolly.
Just kind of just squeeze past each other and crack on. This car, this van, decides, well, no, there is a middle of the road, but there isn't room for you to be on your side of the road, because there isn't your side of the road. You're on one and a half of the road. The thing is fighting you. The steering wheel decides.
Yeah, it's just a terrible idea.
Do you know what I mean? I'm complicating what I'm trying to explain. So the van thinks that I'm over the centre line of the road. Well, I have to be because there's no physical room for me to be anywhere else. The thing is fighting me.
But that's the same with all modern stuff.
I don't know how anyone lives with it.
I got picked up on the way to a launch once, and the lovely chap who was driving the car I was in, he was complaining about exactly the same thing. He was in a Range Rover. A new shape, and I said, there's a button on the steering wheel, press it twice and it won't be press it once, it'll open the driver assist menu. Press it twice once that menu's open and it will turn everything off. And he said, you have made my week. I have been trying to figure out how to do that since I started driving these cars. I hate what cars have become. These are absolutely brilliant vehicles. They're so comfortable, so refined, so smooth and powerful, but they just interfere everywhere they shouldn't. And I can't think of anyone who's spoken to me about any new car and gone, oh, it's the best thing ever. It beeps at me when I'm too close to the white line, when I'm trying to, you know, take evasive action, or I know that there's a big puddle on the left-hand side that I shouldn't go through, so I eke into the middle a little bit.
And then it fights you back.
And it's like...
I just don't understand.
Car developers, I use the term development loosely, need to give their heads a wobble when it comes to this.
It's the government. I don't know what it is. Government legislation, safety, road safety... And yet the person behind the wheel of these cars is still sitting there on their mobile phone.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
And if anything...
I've done a lot. I'll tell you what it is. I'm a little bit tired.
A
little bit ratty, right? And I've driven in the last week a lot.
But I've
seen some real sights.
Driver aids are giving people more of an excuse to pay less attention, surely.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's quite enough of that. I like Land Rovers, older Land Rovers that don't tell you what to do. You can drive them properly.
I think the moral of this is I was absolutely over the moon to jump into my good old-fashioned 2D590 this morning and go up the road. It felt quick. The clutch felt heavy.
You knew you were driving something proper.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
In fact, I'm going to take a long route home on the way home tonight.
Do it.
And go around.
Thoroughly enjoy proper analogue motoring.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this computerized nonsense. But yeah, I'm 100% on board. I took the Series 3. That's right. When the battery packed up on the Freelander, I didn't want to risk driving it to pick the new battery up because I thought if I turn it off and it doesn't restart, or I need to get fuel or stop for any reason and it doesn't restart, then that would be bad. So I took the Series 3 to go and pick the new battery up, and I thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it behind the wheel of that.
Mm.
Absolutely brilliant. Long may it continue.
I think we can keep this going, can't we, with old Land Rovers forever? Do you think?
Yeah.
In our lifetime?
They're inherently rebuildable. Like, unless the government decided to do something stupid. Stupider.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
Yeah, there's no reason why you couldn't. There's no reason why you can't keep driving them forever. Absolutely brilliant.
Mm. There is a problem in the UK, though, at the minute, isn't there? Because cars are getting progressively older. People are now starting to keep them longer.
Well, so they should.
Mm. People are resisting
because cars are ridiculously expensive. It doesn't matter if you buy an electric car or an ICE car or whatever. The cost of buying one now, I know no one looks at the overall on the road price. They just look, how much is it going to cost a month? But the actual price of buying a new car now is absolutely insane.
And fixing them.
Yeah, when the warranty runs out. yeah, it's crazy. So, but each to their own, you know. People have got newer stuff, perfectly happy with it. If, you know, you see a car as an appliance and you take on new technology and it is what it is. But
I just think, like, the way it's gone, how can anybody be interested in driving now? Where's the fun in driving if you haven't to, you know, unclick and go through menus to turn things off? That the car, every time you start that car, it's back to the same.
If they make it fairly easy and simple to do, like JLR products have been, then I don't think it's as much of a problem. You just got to get into your routine, stab the button on the steering wheel.
Whatever, yeah, it's
off. Like, if you can't find how to do it, or if you can't do it at all now, that's really bad.
Mm. Perhaps there is a way in this van, but you're busy trying to crack on and you're not thinking, oh, I wonder how to... You know, even like turning the radio on, it's a screen and it's all this...
Yeah, I'm not...
Oh, just give me buttons.
Yeah.
I'm
not alone in thinking this.
I just like older cars.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah. There you go.
Well, we had enough of a moment. I feel better.
Do you? You've got that off your chest.
Yeah, I was driving that van and was going, yeah, I'm going to have a right moan about this when the opportunity arises. It was just felt that was the right time.
Sure enough. you've got it off your chest.
So this podcast is good for my mental well-being.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. If only it was any good for anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
Thanks for listening, Martin. Thanks.
That's right. I'd have no choice for recording. Anyway. Thanks ever so much, as always, for listening. We love to get your questions. I know I said we'd get through a few more, and we haven't, but we'll spread them out.
Week.
Exactly. Follow me on Instagram if you want. Land Rover Martin. Steve is Steve Miller Automotive. Obviously, follow Land Rover Monthly on our Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And, tell your friends about the podcast. We got some lovely feedback at Newbury about the podcast, didn't we? People were like, oh, yes.
You know. Yeah, that is brilliant.
It's,
love meeting people.
Always nice to see. So, and any questions, any feedback, editorial@lrm.co.uk. Send us a little email. Anything to add, Stephen?
No, I think that's
it. We all tuckered out from
Yeah, do you know what? I just feel really good.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Cool. Well, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.